Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two guests today, Jake Hershon and Jorge Cantu. What's up, guys?
Hey, man. How's it going?
Everything's going good, man. I'm excited to be here today.
Jorge, nice to have you on the pod for the first time. Jake, always a pleasure. And Nick, you know, you in the email about this podcast, I don't know if you were joking, but you said like number 71580. So, yeah, a lot of pods coming out.
It was just actually the date for you, but
shot. Somebody put me in the dirt.
We have recorded a lot of pods and cut you some slack, so you know it's not that far out of the realm of possibilities. But
you tell I know what day it is.
But all right, today we're going to be talking some of the recent free agent signings. The trade happened over this last week. We'll talk about that. Before we get started, just a quick reminder, you can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. But first off, I know somebody in here already has some strong thoughts about this one. Jabari Parker has agreed to sign with the Chicago Bulls on a two-year deal, $20 million per year, second-year team option. Jake, I want to hear your thoughts on this one.
Okay, so yeah, it's me. I'm the one with strong feelings. I hate this. I hate this contract. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know what happened at all. I guess really the problem is that I do. This was just like so painfully predictable. Like a couple days ago, the Bulls rescinded their qualifying offer to David Nwaba, and I started messing around with their like cap on the clean in the glass cap calculator, and I saw that they could get up to $20 million in cap space, and I was like, oh no, because I knew immediately exactly what they were going to do with it, and I was totally right. I really just don't like Jabari Parker as a player very much at all. I think he one of the worst defensive players in the league. But beyond that, I just like, basically my issue with him is that he's just like a larger, slower version of Zach LaVine. And now the Bulls have given regular Zach LaVine and larger, slower Zach LaVine like a combined $100 million, $120 million over the next 4 years. So, I really didn't want to see take a risk on Jabari with this much money, but I definitely didn't want it to be the Bulls because Jabari is a and the Bulls already have their power forward and their center of the future, Jabari Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. a lot more than I like Jabari Parker. It is a good like team friendly deal, but I honestly just think it says a lot more about the Bulls front office that they think that Jabari Parker is a small forward and that they think that a guy who has had two ACL injuries is worth taking this risk on. And I think as long as he doesn't get like catastrophically hurt over the next 2 years, he's definitely going to end up getting the like 5-year max extension when this contract is up. So it's just really, really hard for me to stomach this and get excited about it at all. I just think it was a really poor choice.
Actually, in the opposite end of this, I love this one. I love the signing. I talked a lot about this on Twitter, had a big discussion with a couple of people. But I really like how the Bulls arranged this deal and how the second year is a team option. So let's say things don't work out the first year. Okay, you can always opt out of the team option, maybe renegotiate a new deal, or just say, you know what, that's fine. Let's just try with somebody else. I get how it's a weird fit with Jabari starting at small forward. But I mean, what else could the Bulls do? You know, they had that cap space. They would have to fill it anyway. So, I mean, I don't think they have anything to lose by trying out Jabari in this at the three. I get how they already have Markkanen. They already have Wendell Carter. They already have Robin Lopez. Yeah, they're stacked on bigs. But, you know, they don't have anything to lose by trying out this little experiment, let's call it. Yeah, those are mainly my thoughts on it. I personally really like this move.
All right, so, like, I feel like I'm in the middle between you two because at the same time, like, I'm with you on Jorge on the fact that why not take the risk? You know, you have the cap space. The second year's a team option, so you bring him in. He stays healthy maybe. Maybe he takes his game to a jump. He is from Chicago. He's really wanted to play in Chicago. So who knows if the work ethic and everything else, you know, gets amplified because he's back home. But then to your point, Jake, you know, this is a guy who's really meant to play power forward. You know, he's not really athletic. Defensively, he doesn't give you much. Him playing the three is really questionable. And then, you know, like you said, a bigger Zach LaVine, that's pretty spot on. He gives you a lot offensively. Defensively, you're looking for a lot still. So it could be really bad, but at the same time, this Bulls team is so young. You know, it's not the worst thing to take a flyer on Jabari, because who knows? You know, if he stays healthy, I think Jabari Parker will be better than Andrew Wiggins if he stays healthy long term. I just, you know, obviously the two ACL injuries in the same knee, it makes you worry. And then now $20 million a year. I don't know, but I do like how young this Bulls team looks, and I want to see how it looks before I finally put the nail in the coffin.
Do you guys think it would make more sense for the Bulls to use this cap space to maybe take on a bad contract and then add another first-round pick for next year, or you're happier with the Jabari Parker signing, or even signing somebody else like maybe a Marcus Smart?
Now, the draft sucks. The next draft isn't that good, so I don't know if I would take a risk on taking the contract just to get a pick that, unless it's top three, I don't know how worth that pick is going to be. How much that pick is going to be worth?
You know, I don't really know much. I've not made my research on the prospects for the next draft. But, you know, teams are very hesitant of giving up first-round picks, especially when they're projected to be, you know, first, second, third, fourth picks. Teams are really getting careful after the Nets deal a bunch of years ago. Ever since then, teams are being very careful when dealing first-round picks. So I think the Bulls would have struggled getting a first-round pick along with a bad contract to take on. And that would have been a solid option, but, you know, they maybe just ran out of things to do, and I don't think it's bad. I mean, they're not risking any long-term financial security, so why not try it, you know?
The thing is that if they didn't make this deal, they would have been – the only team in the whole league with cap space, because now Brooklyn and Atlanta have both given away their cap space. So I believe they would have been literally the only team in the league with any cap space. So that would have put them in a really interesting position at the trade deadline to say, like, Portland is trying to put together a deal for Kevin Love at the trade deadline, right? But the only way they can possibly make it work is if they get rid of Evan Turner. Like, no way is the Cleveland taking out Evan Turner, right? So, like, now Portland's desperate and Chicago can, like, leverage them into, like, a really potentially position. So that's what I would have liked to see them do. Overall, I'm fine with the idea of using this cap space on a flyer on a player instead. I just personally wouldn't have had that player be Jabari Parker. But if you think Jabari Parker has like a legitimate like superstar ceiling offensively, then I think it's worth the risk. I just personally don't feel that way.
Jim, moving on from there, we talked about Jabari Parker for a minute or two there. Channing Frye agreed to sign with the Cavs, read up with them, or a nice little reunion, 1 year, $2.4 million deal. Thoughts on Frye going back to Cleveland?
It's a very sweet story. I'm happy for him. It seems like him and Kevin Love are both really happy that he's back in Cleveland. Channing Frye is not much of a player at this point. It's kind of hard for him to find the floor. I thought maybe he would stay in LA just because him and LeBron have a good relationship. He's a great locker room guy and like good mentor, but I guess they didn't want him. So Cleveland's a good spot for him. I'm glad he'll get to play for a couple more years.
Yeah, I agree with that point. He's a great presence in the locker room, especially with the young guys in there, Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance, and now Colin Sexton, who's coming in. But I think he may be able to find some time in the court.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, they bring him back. He's obviously, you know, he played with Cleveland. Him and Kevin Love a good relationship. They want to keep Kevin Love at this point happy, I think. You know, everything points to them not wanting to trade him, so in order to not trade Kevin Love, and he wanted to stay during this rebuild, make him happy, bring in some of his friends. The only thing I want now is for them to re-sign Richard Jefferson. If they bring him back and they start the road trip and podcast again, then I'll be content. But otherwise, I think it's still a solid signing.
Yeah, solid all around. Just a good locker room guy to have around, like you guys mentioned. Moving on to our next one, Shabazz Napier agreed to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. 2-year deal, unsure of the money amount. Second year as a player, a team option as well.
Another pretty solid deal. I think he's still pretty young and has got some potential. I after his first couple stops, I think Miami and Orlando, it really looks like he was not an NBA player. But he was pretty good in Portland last year, like good bench guard, and I think totally worth throwing a little bit of money at. I was honestly pretty surprised that nobody else wanted him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty solid last year. I think he raised a couple of eyebrows here and there. And I just think the Nets are having a great offseason. Now with adding Napier after getting rid of Jeremy Lin, they have D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie on the roster. Well, why not have another, you know, young point guard who can also maybe play a little shooting guard, or, you know, switch Russell to shooting guard. So you can mix things up a little right there, depending on how stuff works. But, you know, he's a great
injury insurance.
Yeah, exactly. He's a great injury insurance policy, let's call it. So, great signing.
Yeah, I like Shabazz. Obviously, he had a really good year last year in Portland. He kind of caught the eye of a lot of people around the league. He had some interest in free agency. And then the Nets have been doing what they've been doing. They've been making low-key, small moves. Taking a flyer on Shabazz, to me, is just making him possibly like another trade asset. You know, if he plays in Brooklyn and plays solidly, I don't think he's really a part of the long-term plan, but maybe he continues to grow, and then Sean Mark can flip him maybe for another draft pick or package him with somebody else to get a bigger player. I just think Sean Marks is looking, you know, 10 steps ahead at all times.
Yeah, I was very happy with the move. Obviously, I'm a Nets fan. Jack and I will probably talk a little bit more about it on the Brooklyn Buzz, but pretty much what you guys said, solid guard. He can play a little bit of off-ball guard as well because he can shoot the three so well as well. Nice injury insurance. Nothing to complain about the signing. And then as well, getting the team option for next year. So you even, you know, keep the cap flexibility. Even the deal's probably going to be small anyway. So like you said, Corey, another solid move for Mr. Marks. Moving on to the next signing, Davis Bertans. We did report this signing earlier on, but that was incorrect. He now signed a 2-year deal, $14 million, with the Spurs. Thoughts on this one?
I like the 2 years, $14 million deal more than the 4 years, $20. It's honestly kind of hard to pass judgment on any of these San Antonio signings right now because I don't know what they're doing. Like, yeah. I just don't know what their plan is. But either way, whether you're trading Kawhi, whether you're trying to keep him, like, whatever, either way, like, signing Bertans for 2 years, 14 is pretty good. I think Bertans is, like, at least is a good, like, third big off the bench, and I think he's young, and it's definitely worth keeping him. So getting him for a couple of years of value totally makes sense.
Yeah, the Spurs are in kind of, like, an awkward position. With all the Kawhi Leonard drama thing going on, they also they just lost Kyle Anderson to the Grizzlies. They lost Tony Parker, so you know there's a lot of things going on in there. So it was good that they got to bring back Bertans. You know, 2 years, $14 million. That's maybe a little bit more than what probably other team could have offered, you know, but it's a 2-year deal, and Bertans was pretty good for the Spurs last year while Kawhi was out. He's solid on defense, as the eye test would suggest, which is what Pop likes, and he's a solid forward that can contribute to the offense. He can shoot the three, so he's overall a very solid rotation forward.
Yeah, I think this is a solid signing. I mean, you know, $7 million a year to me is a little interesting, cause what it was, you know, it was $4 million over or $5 million over four. I don't think it's terrible. Like you guys have mentioned, he's definitely a Spurs guy. You know, he's already played for Pop now, so Pop likes to keep his same guys. It feels like long term. So I think it's a fair sign. I'm with you, Jake. I don't know what the direction of the Spurs are right now. Like, I don't know where they want to go. I feel like they are still holding out hope that they can somehow keep Kawhi Leonard and repair their relationship. So I don't know. I think once we figure out what's going to happen with Kawhi and what the big, you know, big scheme picture plan is here, we might have a better idea, but I think it's a solid move to retain him.
Yeah, I think it's a solid move to retain him. And I think even if whatever direction they go, Bertans is a complimentary player that could kind of fit in a lot of different ways. So not a bad move by the Spurs. Wayne Ellington agreed to re-sign with the Miami Heat, 1 year, $6.3 million. It looks like he's going to try to cash out next year. Thoughts on Ellington back in Miami?
I don't know how they got this dude for $6.3 million. That's a great deal for Miami. They are kind of like absurdly stacked at that shooting guard position right now. I don't really know where all the minutes are going to go, but they'll figure it out. I don't understand at all why, like, the Lakers signed Lance Stephenson when this guy was still available on the market, and like I think every team, like every playoff team, should have been going like hard after this guy. Warriors, Rockets, like the Timberwolves would have loved to have this guy. And it didn't seem like he never really had that much of a market, and sort of ended up going back on a really team friendly deal. So good for the Heat, but just weird move for the rest of the league.
Watch out, make it, you know, take a shot to Lance, right? Let's just just take it easy.
I think, yeah, agree with Jake. This is a great move for the Heat. You know, their cap space situation is a bit complicated.
It's so ugly. It's good that
it's real ugly. So it's good that they found a way to get Ellington back. You know, I thought maybe there's some emotions involved in here. Maybe he didn't want to leave or something. Because, yeah, just as Jake said, great bargain. You know, Ellington was the best shooter. Well, at least three-point shooter for the Heat last year. He led... he led all Heat players in three-pointers made by far. He made 2.9 a game, almost three. And he shot 39.2%. So if the Heat get to keep that, they can still use him to space the floor. Great option at the two guard behind Josh Richardson. Nothing else to say. Just great signing overall by a great price.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. I'm surprised that the market for Wayne Ellington was so small that nobody that needed shooting even looked his way. You know, him going back to Miami for 1 year, it's good for Miami. They're going to remain competitive. He obviously has been fantastic for Miami. You know, I think he had the most threes of anybody coming off the bench last year in the league. You know, the money is good. I wouldn't be shocked if Wayne Ellington gets flipped maybe at the deadline, you know, if a team contending sends something Miami's way. But I think for right now, it's a good signing for Miami.
Yeah, I think Miami really needed to re-sign him and keep that three-point shooting. But like you guys said, it was kind of surprising he didn't get a bigger offer just because he could help so many different teams. And, you know, they might offer him the taxpayer MLE, which would have been pretty similar, around five, and he got six. So it's kind of surprising he ended back up with the Heat. But I think a lot of guys were okay taking the one-year deal this year, and they're going to try to cash out next year.
Yeah, James, I'll say there's a 70% chance when Ellington gets dealt at the deadline, just saying.
Because of the deal that he signed, I think because of the one-year deal and the Heat not having his bird rights, he has a no-trade clause.
Oh, really?
In his one-year deal. So, yeah, unless he wants to get moved somewhere, he probably won't.
And one more note about Wayne Ellington. He's kind of bounced around, and Jorge kind of mentioned this. Maybe he wants to stay in Miami and kind of maybe he'll get a bigger contract next year. We'll see what happens, though. James Ennis agreed to sign with the Houston Rockets, two-year deal, $4 million. Thoughts on this one?
Great, great bounce back move by Houston. Obviously a big story of this summer was them losing Luke Mbamute and Trevor Ariza. And that was really, really concerning. They became super thin on the wing when that was like one of their biggest strengths last year and what really kept them in that series against the Warriors. So I think this was a really, really good move to fill in one of those spots. Ennis is like not quite the three-point shooter that Ariza is, but he's a really, really strong wing defender and is going to be good in those small ball lineups against the Warriors. He's another guy who I actually thought the Warriors themselves should have targeted. So Daryl Morey in Houston.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything Jake said. You know, the Rockets were forced to find somebody to replace Ariza and Mbamute. Like, losing them is crucial to their chances of beating the Warriors now. They send the money Chris Paul's way. They're still in trouble with Clint Capella. They couldn't re-sign Ariza. They couldn't re-sign Mbamute. So they had to pull something out, you know? So just as Jake said, you know, Ennis is not as good at threes as Ariza. Maybe not even as good as Tucker, but I do believe that that Mike D'Antoni will find a way to maximize his abilities in the right role, just as he did with Tucker. I believe D'Antoni will figure out something. But
yeah, this is like you guys mentioned, this is a great bounce back signing. Obviously, losing Trevor Ariza and Mbamute, they need to fill that spot. I think Jay Ennis is solid. I mean, he gives you good defense, which is what they really need, a wing defender. Scoring-wise, I mean, he's shown glimpses of being able to score. It's just being consistent, being able to be more efficient. But, you know, he's still young. I think this is a really good move for the Rockets, especially, as you know, losing Ariza was huge for them. So being able to kind of fill his shoes will help.
Like you guys said, a much-needed move for the Houston Rockets. Now maybe one of the more surprising moves, I guess I would say. Isaiah Thomas agreed to sign with the Denver Nuggets, one-year, $2 million deal.
I'm really happy for Isaiah. Even though he ended up taking the massive pay cut, you know, he did was expecting to sign a $200 million contract with the Celtics not long ago. Happy for him that he found a place to play and a place that's going to be like a pretty good fit. It really got kind of scary there for a minute after the Magic decided not to sign him. It turned out they were never really even that close. And all of a sudden it was like, where is this guy going to go? Guy who finished fifth last year. Looks like he might not have a roster spot for a minute, but he found it. And I think it's a really good move for Denver too. They have been a little lacking at that like traditional point guard spot because Jamal Murray's a really good player, but he's really a score first type of guy. And so is Isaiah, but that's okay. This team's got so much offense, just so much offensive firepower. Just throw him out there. Him and Jokic are really going to tear some defenses up.
Yeah, I mean, this move was pretty surprising because with all the offense the Nuggets are able to create with the players they had on the roster before signing Isaiah, I would expect them to try and sign, you know, maybe one or two defensive-minded guys, you know, to kind of like balance out things a little. But no, they went and did the exact opposite. They went and got Isaiah, which is, as Jake said, scoring first point guard, but he's also a great playmaker. This may be one of the best deals in free agency. Like, that's a bargain. If I'm not mistaken, I think this is the minimum deal, right? Is this a minimum deal?
Yeah, this will be a minimum deal.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a bargain. He was like an MVP candidate, what, two seasons ago maybe? So the Nuggets get a proven scorer off the bench. I suppose he's coming off the bench after Murray, of course. Plus a veteran presence for the young roster in Denver. The only question I have about this is what are the plans for Denver defensively? You know, because as much offense as they have, you know, they'll have to face, you know, the Rockets of the West, the Warriors in the West. So what about defense? Are they just planning to outscore everyone? Because, you know, they may be able to get away with pretty good offense, you know, every now and then. But, you know, sometimes shots just don't fall and you have to rely on defense. So, you know, I really wasn't expecting this move. But it's really good that Isaiah found a home and that the Nets could give him what he was looking for.
The Nuggets, you know, I mean, I like this move a lot, actually. You know, that bench unit is going to be an offensive juggernaut at the same time as the starting lineup for the most part. Obviously, defense is going to be probably a question mark. They've already kind of had some questionable defense. But they had, you know, really good offenses in the past. So now, for me, this is just adding another offensive weapon. I mean, that bench unit is Isaiah Thomas, you know, Will Barton. I mean, both those guys can score relatively at ease. Mason Plumlee can catch some oops from Isaiah Thomas. The starting lineup, Gary Harris. I mean, this team is really deep. I mean, this is a really deep team in the West, which is what you really need in the West. So I'm excited about it. Mike Malone and Isaiah Thomas obviously have a relationship from the Sacramento King days. So I think that must have played a big part in it because I don't think, you know, Mike Malone must have wanted Isaiah Thomas for this to all work out too. But I'm glad Isaiah found a home, as you mentioned, Jake. You know, it looked like for a minute that he may not even, you know, have a team at the start of the season. And this guy, when he's healthy, we have to see how the hip injury is, you know. But if he's healthy, this is still a guy who can give you, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of valuable playing time until, you know, he probably tries to find a bigger starting role somewhere else.
Yeah, you can't complain about it on the Nugget side. You know, you're not really taking a big risk with the money amount. It's only a one-year deal. And the ceiling is very high in his potential in terms of scoring. So we did have a trade the other day. Just to make it a little bit easier, we'll look at it as one trade. I know technically it was probably two trades, but they're kind of correlated. So between Brooklyn, Denver, and Atlanta, Brooklyn received Kenneth Faried, Darrell Arthur, Denver's 2019 first-round pick, protected 1 through 12, Denver's 2020 second-round pick, unprotected, Portland's 2020 second-round pick, protected 31 to 55, and the rights to Isaiah Corinaire. Atlanta receives Jeremy Lin, Brooklyn's 2025 second-round pick, Brooklyn's 2023 pick swap, and then Denver received Isaiah Whitehead. Thoughts on this deal?
So definitely a heist for Brooklyn to get a...
That's what I love to hear, Jake.
yeah, I know it. No, I'm not just kissing your ass. I do really love the move for Brooklyn. They got a first-round pick. I'm assuming it's going to be in the, like, 13 to 20 range for two expiring contracts. So that's a pretty great move. They didn't even take any long-term money on. And that's sort of the type of thing I was talking about with Chicago, is when you're one of or the only team with cap space, you can take advantage of desperate teams. I personally wish the Nuggets had been a little more desperate and stingy with their money last year when they were giving a 3-year, $42 million contract to Mason Plumlee. I wish that that's the decision that they had, really let the luxury tax effects instead of trading away a first-round pick to get off of expiring money. But I understand that they have to do it. It's just one of those realities of the NBA where sometimes you have to get under the luxury tax, especially when you're not anything like a championship-caliber team. You know, so I get the move for them, and then Atlanta, I guess, just kind of pokes their head in because they've got cap space and they're just trying to, like, get any asset that they possibly can. I mean, they end up with Jeremy Lin and a couple second-round picks that are going to convey in, like, 5 years. So I don't know. I can't say, honestly, that I totally understand what their thought process was here, but I guess – and then this is another sign that Dennis Schroeder is going to – I don't know where they could possibly trade him, but I think they're going to try and unload him somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Just Sean Marks is just a genius. What else can we say? Like, this is just another great move for the Nets. Adding Fareed and Arthur, that's a big upgrade inside the paint, especially in the rebounding department, which the Nets may not have been, you know, really, really solid at. So, you know, this is a great addition on the interior. Just as Jake said, expiring contract, so no risk at all right here. They also got a couple of picks, even that first round protected. You know, the Nuggets are not expected to be you know, one of the first teams to pick in the draft, so not too big of a risk there. Yeah, that's for the Nets side. As for the Nuggets, well, this was all about dumping salary, so mission accomplished, right? And as for the Hawks, I think, like, just as Jake said, you know, this is just another sign that points that Dennis Schroeder will get, you know, dealt soon.
This was a good move, I think, almost all the way around. You know, obviously the Nuggets needed to shred some cap. They've been trying to get rid of Fareed, which feels like forever. They get rid of him. You know, Daryl Arthur, good locker room guy, he's solid. I'm not sure if the Nets are going to keep Fareed. I know I heard rumors about them possibly buying him out.
No, he's going to stay. He tweeted out yeah, that he's excited to come to Brooklyn. I think he had a meeting with Sean Marks like the day after.
Cool. So even better. You know, like you mentioned, Jorge, you know, he gives interior defense. He can rebound. He can catch oops and slam. I think he's a nice guy for Brooklyn to have. The draft picks, you know, we'll have to see where we're at in 2025 to see, you know, how some of these picks turn out. And then you look at the Jeremy Lin to Atlanta. I agree with you guys. I think it does, you know, kind of signal that Dennis Schroeder is on his way out. I know I saw rumors about the Pelicans possibly being interested in trying to acquire him, but I don't know how in, you know, God's name to make that work with the contracts. And I think that's another guy who's kind of tougher to move because, as we've mentioned, there's not a ton of places with cap space that can take on Schroeder. You know, they're definitely looking ahead. And then for Denver, obviously, they got rid of the contracts. And for the Nets, you know, I just think it was solid. This was a good trade.
Yeah, no complaints for me, obviously, on the Nets side. Like I mentioned, Jack and I have Brooklyn buzz. We kind of went in depth a little bit more in the trade. But Sean Marks adds another draft pick. It kind of reminds you a little bit of the Damari Carroll deal. Maybe they'll get something nice out of Fareed. On the Atlanta side, I mean, it was kind of strange to take Lin pretty much for free because it's a 2025 second-round pick, which Jack told me is like a sixth grader. So a 2023 pick swap, which most likely, if I had to make a guess, I feel like the Nets will be in a better position than the Hawks at that time. So don't really feel upset about that. I will say about Jeremy Lin, though, he did really help set the culture in Brooklyn. So maybe Atlanta is hoping to have him there kind of set with their rebuild and have just a nice veteran presence around there, a good locker room guy. And like you guys said, Denver pretty much wanted to get rid of money and they got rid of money. It was a kind of a hefty price, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But before we get out of here, guys, where do you guys think Carmelo Anthony's going to land?
Ooh.
It seems like he's going to end up in Houston. It just seems like doomed to happen. It's so funny. I feel like I'm having deja vu because just a year ago, I was dreading that Carmelo was going to end up in Houston and I was going to have to watch him on that team. So and now here we all are all over again. I like I still personally feel like he might end up in LA, but everyone's happening. So I think it's going to be Houston.
Yeah, this is very painful for me to watch because I'm a really, really big Carmelo Anthony fan. Like, I love watching him when he was in Denver, then those great times he had in New York. So it's really painful to watch him struggle this way today. As much as everyone's saying that that he will end up in Houston, I think a lot of people, just as Jake was saying, are overlooking the Lakers. Because I see all these reports pointing, yeah, Melo to Houston, pretty much a done deal. You know, all these things that he's going to Houston to team up with Chris Paul. But I think people are not taking into account that the Lakers also have a really good chance. And, you know, I'm sure Melo likes the L.A. life. Like, he already played in a big market in New York. He said he enjoyed it. You know, OKC was, like, the total opposite. A pretty small market, or, you know, at least small compared to what we saw, to what he experienced in New York. So I think L.A. has a fair chance to grab him, too. I guess, you know, it just all depends on where he wants to go, because it's either Houston or L.A. at this point, even though the Heat also appear to be in a spot to grab him. But, yeah, I think it's either L.A. or Houston.
Yeah, it's definitely between L.A. and Houston, a.k.a. LeBron and Chris Paul. It's someone in the banana boat he's going to be playing with next year. I think it's almost a lock. I know Philly came, there was a report about Philly last week or so.
What about D-Wade? There's been some talk about Miami, too.
Yeah, that's what I
mean, I think if you're Melo, you're trying to win. I don't think you're trying to go to a situation where you're just playing with a buddy. Like, I think Melo wants to win. I think he wants to shake that label of not being able to win. I think that's why, like, pairing up with Chris Paul kind of makes sense, because both of them haven't had a ton of playoff success. You know, and then obviously if you play with LeBron, you kind of know what you're going to get. I don't know. I don't believe any report that says it's a lock. Cause I can remember vividly reading a tweet that said last year Carmelo Anthony to the Rockets was on the 1 yard line, and you know that completely fell apart. And it was apparently on the 1 yard line.
They pulled the Seahawks.
Yeah, you know, they decided to pass instead of run. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we got to see where it finally ends up. But I think without a doubt it's between Houston and LA, and maybe he is leaning towards Houston. But I think one phone call from LeBron James or Magic Johnson and all that could change.
Yeah.
Definitely something to keep an eye on for the next week or two. But, guys, that wraps it up. Thank you, as always, for hopping on. Corey, Jorge, Jake. And, as always, thank everybody for listening. Check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. Also, check out OTGBasketball.com for a new site upgrade.
It's lit.